Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to the Ghosts of Harrenhal. My name's Simon.
And I'm McKelly.
Thank you for joining us for episode 182. This might sound familiar, but I used to catch the 182 bus from school. There was a choice between
and
the
181. How many buses did you take to school?
there was a choice of two buses. It sort of depended on the timing.
Okay.
The 182 was slightly more direct. The 181 was a little bit more circuitous. So
if you missed the 181, you were stuck with the 182.
All the way around.
The
181 went around the houses a little bit, which is a pain.
Oh.
But it did go up on top of a hill with kind of nice views of the countryside. So
depends on
your
mood.
Yeah. Snot-nosed teenager, I probably would have appreciated the 181, you know. Anyway, it's episode 182 of our chapter by chapter book review of A Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today we'll eventually be discussing chapter 38 of A Storm of Swords. That's Tyrion 5.
While we do that, we're going to chat about the chapter, try not to spoil any future plot points for you, and hopefully provide you with some entertainment along the way.
We'll summarize what happened, discuss our thoughts, and it provides some useful background, compare it to the television show, indulge in a little pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondence. Be sure to check out the show notes. They'll provide some additional information about the characters and geography of this chapter. How are you, McKelly?
I'm doing just fine. How about yourself?
I'm well.
All right.
Mustn't grumble.
Good. But you will.
I do occasionally, but I shouldn't.
We just came off of a very fun wildfireside chat where we discussed what we do with $10 million.
Ah, yes. Happy days.
Yes. Yeah, that was fun. If you're interested in hearing the answers, become a sustainer and you can go listen to the episode. So you sent me, as you promised you would do, you sent me the images of your gross, really, really gross blister from
and
your poison
you sent
ivy.
Me, vomit emojis.
I did. That was what I was feeling. It was very accurate emojis. And I tried to do my part of the deal, and I tried to upload said gross photos to our Discord server, and Discord kept rejecting them as explicit content. So, even the Discord AI bots were grossed out by those images. So,
it was pretty revolting.
It was.
I can't even. Off.
That is bigger than I thought. You mentioned last week that it was a huge blister. That is bigger than I pictured in my head.
Did you zoom in on the one where you can see the sort of honeycomb within it?
I have not zoomed in at all. Surprisingly, I have not zoomed in at all.
Listen, once you know, on an empty stomach, zoom in and look at the structure of the blister. It's quite something.
Maybe I will gird my loins one of these days and try and further inspect.
The saga of my poison ivy continues because it is now mostly cleared up. It is, it's left some marks on my skin.
Okay.
I'll show McKelly. Can you see on my arm? Some red marks.
Right, yes.
So I like to do my civic duty. And one of the things that I would like to do is to give blood. But in the United States, I have been forbidden from giving blood because of mad cow disease.
I think you've told me that before.
I believe I have. So, but the Red Cross has recently changed its rules. And they said that people who lived in Britain in the late 80s, early 90s can now give blood in the United States.
Okay, good.
That on the website. I called them to confirm. Lady confirmed that it was true. I said, moo! Just to freak her out a little bit.
Right, just a little bit.
So I made an appointment for this morning, and I got up early, and I drove to work, and went to the blood drive, and I got to the blood drive, and they said, "Do you have any illnesses?" And I said, "No, I've got poison ivy, but you know it's mostly cleared up now." And the people checking me in were nurses, and they said, "That's fine, okay." And I signed all the paperwork, and I sat down, and I went to the table where they were going to take the blood, and the nurse took one look at me and went, "Uh-uh."
I'm not touching you.
Exactly. She was like, and then she said, let me get someone else over. She's got a more senior nurse over. And she was like, that stuff is exactly where we want to stick the needles. We're not doing that.
Oh.
And they turfed me out. And the ladies at the front desk were like, I think that's more to do with them not wanting to touch you than.
But weren't they wearing rubber gloves?
I know. But.
Is it right in your elbow crack there?
It is in the elbow crack, yeah.
Huh. But, wow, that's surprising.
I mean, there are gaps. You could miss the poison ivy.
The needle's not that thick.
Right. And I hope not. It's been a long time. As I recall, it didn't seem that thick.
Well, that's disappointing.
I still haven't given blood. The U.S. blood supply remains clear of mad cow disease.
I guess. Well, at least now you know. When the poison ivy clears, you can do it. Yeah. Next time around.
So, it's a gift that keeps giving.
I guess so. Mm-hmm. Man, you need a gardener.
I do. Remember, $10 million.
That's right. That's all I need. Of the things.
All right, well, let's get down to business. How did we leave Tyrion Lannister? Last we saw of Tyrion, he was asking Bronn to rid him of the ever-troublesome Simon Silvertongue. He was admiring the two shiny new Valyrian swords that had been acquired by House Lannister, the provenance of which was dubious, although we have one very long, icy sword suggestion for where it might have come from.
Yes.
And he was regretting not having given the Silvertongue treatment to Maester Pycelle and Janna Slynt while he had the reins of power. The latter is now being tapped to take over the Night's Watch as news of Mormont's probable death has reached King's Landing. McKelly, why don't we give the summary of this one?
I think we can do that right about now. Tyrion leads the Honor Guard to welcome Prince Doran Martell to King's Landing to take up his seat on the Small Council. As the Dornish host arrives, Tyrion quizzes Pod on the sigils. It's an imposing bunch. 9 of the greatest houses of Dorne have sent lords, ladies, or their heirs. Tyrion's worried. It's a show of strength that doesn't bode well. He begins to question the wisdom of sending Marcella to Dorne. His foreboding is redoubled when Pod, a font of knowledge today, observes that there's no litter.
Tyrion knows that Prince Doran suffers from gout and only travels by litter. Now he's really worried and cannot sit still. He rides the welcoming party forward. The Dornish are famed for their horses, their horsemanship, and their archery. All are on display. Tyrion welcomes them and feigns curiosity as to which is Prince Doran. Doran's younger brother, Oberyn, removes his helmet and makes Doran's excuses. Introductions follow, and Oberyn announces to his party that the king favours them by sending his own Uncle Imp to greet them.
Oh, how nice. Mm-hmm. Tyrion now feigns amusement and introduces his own group. They are nowhere near as distinguished. Oberyn is known as the Red Viper. His renown is considerable. At 16, he killed the huge Lord Ironwood in a duel that was supposed to just be to First Blood. Some hinted at poison. He's known to have traveled in Essos, learned poison craft while there, forged 6 links of a maester's chain in Old Town, fought in Essos with the Second Sons, and even formed his own company of sellswords. A great lover of both women and men, he's generally a living legend.
Lastly, Tyrion recalls that Oberyn crippled Willis Tyrell in a joust. Nobody will be less welcome at the wedding. Mm-hmm. The Martell force is only 300, so not a real threat. Tyrion's more worried about the thousands of Tyrell men still in town. As they ride, Oberyn tells Tyrion that they had met previously when Tyrion was born. News of his monstrosity reached Oberyn in Old Town. He travelled to Casterly Rock with his mother and sister.
Tyrion rightly guesses that it wasn't a great time to visit. Tywin's grief was substantial, and the visitors were basically ignored. For most of their time, they only heard Tyrion's crying. But Oberyn really wanted to see the claws, the tail, the huge head, all the scurrilous half-truths that he'd heard. The day before they left, Cersei and Jaime took them to the nursery and presented a naked Tyrion to Elia and Oberyn.
Oberyn was hugely disappointed. Basically, just a baby. Slightly large head, slightly small legs. Elliot even cooed with delight at his cuteness. Cersei, on the other hand, twisted the poor thing's penis until he cried out in pain, contending that he was indeed a monster, as he killed her mother. Only Jaime telling her to stop, save the baby from her castration. Oberyn then asks if it's true that Tyrion is taxing the whores. True enough, the only way to pay for the extravagant nuptials. Oberyn assures Tyrion that he will help fill the coffers while in town.
Oberyn asks for brothel recommendations, but then abruptly turns the conversation to his hunger for revenge. He confesses to being as close to Elia as Jaime and Cersei are to each other. Tyrion shudders at the thought. Tyrion tries to forestall, busy with the war, no time to dredge up 16-year-old murders. Oberyn becomes more serious. He won't be treated as a fool. He'll start with the Mountain, and from him, he'll learn who ordered the murders.
Tyrion issues his own threat. With the Goldcloaks, the Lannister men, and the Tyrells, Oberyn needs to behave. Oberyn says that flowers bow to the sun, or will get trampled underfoot. As you trampled Willis? Tyrion asks. Yeah. At this, Oberyn surprises Tyrion. He's actually friends with Willis, who bears him no ill will. Oberyn's ire is saved for Mace Tyrell, who put Willis and all his sons in the lists too young. Tyrion bigs up Loras, but Oberyn dismisses Tawny Winds, and the news of his feats on the Blackwater came from the same people who saw Renly's ghost. Tyrion recommends Chatayas and rides off with a warning zinger.
We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Harrenhal affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes. Oh boy.
Yeah.
This is...
Can I just say, I loved this chapter so much. I really loved this chapter. It was so good. I mean, you notice that normally I'm dribs and drabsing after you in the notes. You know, you sort of like, you're the vanguard of our note-taking. But I loved this one so much. I was just inspired and I got flying as soon as I read it.
You have a ton of notes. Yeah, it's really good stuff.
It's Oberyn. I mean, he's such a great new character. He's kind of what the books need. Because as I thought about this, I thought about how quiet the other storylines of this book are becoming in some ways. I mean, there's the chance that the whole war with the Starks is going to die down. The Starks are going to go back to the north and retake it. Daenerys
hasn't been heard or seen from in ages.
Yeah, I mean, she's watching her dragons grow.
I guess.
It's going to take a few years, you know. Stannis is at bay, nothing he can do.
Right.
And so the story really needed an injection of some new narrative drive. And Oberyn Martell is the story, of course, is Elia's murder and then wanting revenge for Elia's murder,
right,
which we've always heard as a sort of backdrop to the Martells getting involved in anything in the rest of the Seven Kingdoms, is the first thing they're going to want is justice for Elia.
Yeah.
But you could send a diplomatic person and have this stretch out for years, or you could send Oberyn Martell and just light the fire, light the blue touch paper and retreat, because
right,
fireworks are coming.
Yeah. You know, it's nice to get Dorne involved here because kind of like Stannis was through a Game of Thrones, we heard his name bandied about and, you know, he was a force off screen, but it wasn't until Clash of Kings that we actually got to see him in person in our story. And here, you know, same thing for, where are we, 3 books in now, 2.5 books in, we've heard about Dorne and the Martells and all the, you know, their influence on things. But now we finally have a Martell, and boy, did they pick quite the Martell to send us.
Yeah. So it starts with the sort of welcoming committee. It's funny that Tyrion was quite concerned about the people in his retinue. He recognized that it wasn't much of a welcoming committee when he was the highest person there, and the lords that were with him were kind of second-tier lords. And then that only gets worse when he sees all the banners coming towards him, which Pod very handily knows all of them, you know, and gets them all right. Aces the test. and he realizes how big this imbalance is. But part of the reason that Dorne has sent all of these major houses is because they have filched on the real part of the deal, which is supposed to be Prince Doran.
Right.
And he's missing. So they had to sort of compensate for that.
Yeah, you know what I thought about regarding Tyrion's side of this greeting party here is that still no Kevin Lannister. He's apparently still too depressed about the death of his son and the near death of his other son to ride out and greet the Dornish contingent. And there's also no Tyrell present. Very, you know, one of the Tyrell sons could have easily gone out and been part of the welcoming committee, but
yeah, that strand to the story is something that I think the TV show dropped, and as a result I'd kind of forgotten it, because it's been a lot longer since I've read the books than since I've watched the TV show, so things that happen in the TV show I remember better, you know what I mean?
Right.
But the whole Willis thing was dropped, and so that enmity between the Tyrells and the Martells, which funnily enough doesn't stretch to the two protagonists.
Right.
Oberyn and Willis have a good friendship. Well, a friendship. But the rest of the Tyrells don't like the Martells because of it.
Right. And just the general bad blood between the Reach houses and the Dornish houses. You know,
of course, that's true. They share a border which is often contentious, right?
Yes. For thousands of years, I think there's been bickering and fighting at the border areas. So, but yeah, I guess Kevin is... you know, he's just still not able to get out of bed, or I don't know. Yeah. You'd think otherwise, you'd think he'd be here, because I don't think Tywin was thrilled with having to send Tyrion, but he knew better than to send Joffrey.
Yes, because Joffrey apparently was learning Dornish jokes.
Yes.
How many Dornishmen does it take to change a horse?
Right.
To shoe a horse. 9. To shoe a horse. 1 to shoe the horse. 8 to lift the horse up in the air. Yeah.
And another thing about Tyrion's retinue compared to the Dornish one is that during roll call, Tyrion has to resort to calling out Bronn of the Blackwater and playing up the importance of Podrick Payne.
And Pod,
So he was really reaching. He's scraping the bottom of the barrel there.
And this is my horse.
Bronn's been a knight for like a few months. He's like, Sir Bronn of the Blackwater.
Tyrion's gonna be awfully relieved that Prince Doran wasn't there. He'd be like, oh my god. So Pod's job actually is to carry Joffrey's banner into the welcoming committee, which is of course the banner of the stag and the lion. Again, nothing to see here, people who doubt his parenthood.
Right.
And one thing I'll mention actually, just to sort of precursor of the comparison with the TV show. Pod in the TV show was a young man, but they mentioned here that he's still a kid. He's only just taller than Tyrion at this point.
So yeah, I think he's early teens, like 12, 13-ish.
Yeah, but he was definitely quite a bit older in the TV show. He's like 16, 17, something like that.
Seems to be the case with most of the characters, actually.
But, well, of course, that's true. But it also, it makes you sort of like think about the fact that His killing of Mandon Moore, when it's a 17-year-old, well, that's one thing. But when it's a 12, 13-year-old, then that's kind of like a bigger deal in many ways.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, you're right. He'd be much smaller.
Right.
And that's true.
Yeah. I do love the growth of Pod as a character, actually. Have you watched Ted Lasso?
I have.
I've started to watch it. I haven't watched it all yet. But you know the groundskeeper, Nate?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's who Pod reminds me of.
Oh, yeah. I could see that. Yeah. Sure. Yes.
Sort of sweet and innocent, and sort of like hesitant to speak at first, but once he gets into his flow, he's actually got good ideas. You know, his being tested on the banners, the sigils, was like that. He was very hesitant at first, and by the end, he was kind of like just
shouting them out. Yeah. So you're finally watching Ted Lasso. That's good. Last time we talked about it, you were still reluctant to start.
Yeah. You know. It's all right. It's good. I mean, it's so sweet. It is quintessentially American, though. Because one thing about watching the show, we just watched an episode, actually. And the episode we watched is the one where Rebecca, the owner, confesses to plotting against Ted. That she hired him to bring them down.
Right.
And he immediately forgives her.
Spoiler alert.
I think you find that out in episode one that she's doing that.
Yes, you do.
And it's no surprise that Ted forgives her, because Ted is that kind of person, you know? And honestly, it's just, you could wrap them in their flags. She could be wrapped in a British flag, scheming, mean-spirited, horrible person, and wrap him in Stars and Stripes, forgiving and open-hearted and big, you know? And that's how I see Americans and British people.
Really? I do not see British people as mean and scheming.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's because we're good at it.
If you weren't, we would know. Anyway, weren't we talking about a chapter of a book?
Yes. So I will say, Pod and Bronn, for me, always elevate Tyrion chapters when they're in one. It's always more fun.
Oh, yeah. I agree. Yeah. Good characters.
And the TV show knew it too, because they get a lot of extra airtime in the TV show just for the humor that they brought.
They do provide humor. They provide some levity in sometimes tough situations.
So let's go through the Dornish families that were represented. So the Martells of Sunspear, of course, their sigil is a sun with a spear through it. Not very clever, that sun spear, you see.
Oh, sun yeah. Spear. Quite literal in their interpretation there. And then we get Dalt of Lemonwood, and their sigil is three lemons on a purple background.
The Blackmonts of Blackmont have a black vulture carrying a baby on a yellow background, which is kind of gruesome.
Yeah, maybe we'll look into that, the history of that sigil sometime. We get Manwoody of Kingsgrave. Their sigil is a crowned skull on black.
You see, Kingsgrave.
Kings.
The crowned skull. I figured that one out a little bit. Uh-huh. The Corgils of Sandstone, three black scorpions on red.
Uller of Hellholt, red and yellow flames. I believe we maybe have talked about
that. Oh, really? Before.
That sounds familiar, but I could be wrong.
The Illyrians of God's Grace, a yellow hand in a red and black circle, which Bronn describes as a red and black pie, but it's just a circle. Yeah.
He must be hungry.
They look like slices to him, you know.
Yeah.
If he was more modern, it would be pizza.
Right. The Gargalins?
I like the way you said it the first time.
Gargalins of Salt Shore, a red cockatrice with a black snake in its beak. Mm-hmm. I don't know what a cockatrice is. So.
It's like a chicken.
That's what Bronn called it, a chicken.
That's what Bronn called it, yeah. I think more like a cockatoo or something like that. A cockatiel, perhaps. George, you know who'll tell us?
Who?
Grace will tell us.
Grace will tell us. That she will, yes. Yep. She will tell us all about that, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. And then Jordain of the Tor is a golden quill on green checks. Dark green, light green checks.
Uh-huh.
Obviously it's new to us, both mostly. I mean, I think you mentioned you think Illyrians might have cropped up, but it's the Dorne and the Martells generally have just not been in the books to this point. So we don't know. But Tyrion says, these are all major houses. There's no fillers here. This is This is a top-notch crowd.
And you know something else that struck me when Oberyn was, you know, introducing all these people, is that there were several women in the honor guard. So it's just an example of how different things are in Dorne compared to rest of the realm, where, you know, Oberyn's mother was the ruler of Dorne before Doran Martell, became the prince of Dorne. And so when the two sides, you know, both introduce the, you know, who's all in their retinues, Oberyn turns to his retinue and says, "See how well King Joffrey loves us? He was so kind to send us his own Uncle Imp to bring us to court." And, you know, he gets laughs all around, including Bronn, who chortles at it. And as usual, Tyrion takes the role of the incompetent, silly little man that he does when he's required to, you know, to play that role in order to defuse the situation here. And, you know, he swallows his the personal insult and laughs along with the crowd, which surely is hard to do, but it seems like he's been doing it his whole life. He's done it on so many occasions that, you know, I noticed that, you know, Oberyn made a kind of a mean-spirited joke at his expense, and Tyrion, rather than getting upset about it, just played along with the crowd.
Couple of things. One is Tyrion is well aware of Oberyn Martell's reputation and probably didn't want to offend him by saying oi. And secondly, a lot of that is Tyrion's diplomacy in the face of the imbalance of the retinues. If Oberyn Martell had arrived with a ragtag bunch of foot soldiers and Kevin Lannister and Tyrion Lannister and, you know, Mace Tyrell, you know, had all come out to meet them, then he wouldn't have stood for that joke. But because they'd offended them by not sending a good enough retinue, which is what Oberyn is actually pointing out. The real point of Oberyn's comment is not to offend Tyrion. It's to point out how poor the reception is.
Yes, I agree.
That he has to swallow his pride on that one.
Yeah, that's true. He does have to do a little eggshell walking. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook, or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes.
So, Daeron the First Targaryen identified three ethnic Dornish groups. Tyrion mentions this. This is not background. Tyrion actually mentions this. Daeron, perhaps a little pre-woke, refer to them as the Salty, the Sandy, and the Stony. The Salty were coastal, dark-haired, dark-skinned. The Sandy were desert folk, darker still, who all wore silk headscarves against the sun. And both these groups were descended from the Rhoynar. The Stony Dornish people were fairer and more from Andalstark. And Tyrion mentions that all three groups are represented here. These families represent all of these ethnic regions. And what you said before about the sort of like rivalry with the Tyrells, I wonder if the Stony Dornish people wonder about their allegiance, sort of look at themselves and look at the Tyrells and the Reach and think, we're more ethnically close to them than we are to our countrymen, you know?
Yeah, sure. I could see that. Yeah. And just speaking of the countrymen, just to remind everyone what the Rhoynish blood means is that, you know, the Sandy Dornish have mostly Rhoynish blood. There's a lot of ish in there. That's in reference to when Queen Nymeria led her people out of the Rhoyne and Essos due to war. Eventually, they ended up in Dorne and allied with House Martell. Yeah. So that's where the Rhoynish blood comes from.
Yeah. I think the point of this sort of digression on the racial makeup of the Martells is to point out that the Martells are very unified here.
Yes,
the whole
all
country
reps.
Is represented.
Yeah, all are represented, right.
Yeah. Oberyn's chat with Tyrion sort of nicely develops his character. He's witty, he's urbane, but he is blowtorch fierce, you know.
Oh, yes.
He's but solicitous as well, as exhibited by his friendship with Willis Tyrell. He's believed to have a brood of bastard daughters known as the Sand Snakes, but never to have sired a son, apparently.
Yeah, how about that?
But it doesn't appear that any of the Sand Snakes are here for the ride. He's brought his paramour, Ilaria, but not any of his daughters. I think of him as kind of a combination of Jaime and Tyrion. You know, he's got the sort of handsome and he's feared and smart, but he's also a fun-loving roister-doister in the same way Tyrion is, you know?
Sure. Yeah, I could see that. I could see the combo. Yeah.
Mm. But there is a bloodthirstiness that I don't think even Jaime has.
Tyrion, almost as soon as he realizes that it's Oberyn and not Doran Martell, he thinks, you know, he's throughout the chapter been thinking of the Dornish jokes that Joffrey has been learning. And Tyrion thinks to himself, how many Dornishmen does it take to start a war? One.
And that one.
Right from the get-go, you can see that he's got the kind of personality that is, going to cause problems. And that his, you know, as we learn through the chapter, his immediate concern is justice for Ilya and her children.
Yeah.
And based on the way he says things and the things he says, he's clearly got very little love for the Lannisters.
Right. Right.
And even just his general presence, him bringing his bastard-born paramour is surely going to create havoc for wedding planning for, Cersei is who Tyrion thinks is going to have a problem with it.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Martells' gripes against the Lannisters are legitimate, and even the Lannisters would admit to that, even while trying to hide the evidence. But despite Oberyn has this personal relationship with Willis, but there's still the Tyrell Martell animosity, which, as you said, has both the Willis aspect and the thousands of years of rivalry aspect to
right.
it.
Right, right.
But then to add on top of that, the paramour, it makes the whole wedding planning so difficult. How is Tyrion, although I think Cersei is really in charge of seating, supposed to seat all these people to not cause offense? I mean, it's impossible. It's absolutely impossible. I'm going to go out on a limb and say entirely intended by the Martell.
Yes, it very well could be, right? Yeah. I mean, yeah, what is their show of force? What is the meaning behind it? Is it just to show how seriously they're taking having representation on the King's Small Council? Or, you know, is it to show that they won't be a patsy and demand respect? They're not going to be pushed around?
Yeah.
And, it's pretty interesting, but...
Yeah, I do think some of it is to cover over the fact that Prince Doran wasn't there. That's part of it.
Sure, yes. I hadn't thought about that till you mentioned it, but it is a good point to make.
But you're absolutely right. I mean, some of it is like, we're on the small council now and you're going to hear us, you know?
Yeah, right. And about Oberyn, we learn a lot of interesting background things about him. One of the first things we learn is that during a duel with Lord Ironwood, which was mentioned in the summary, that Doran and this Lord Ironwood were just supposed to fight to first blood, and both got
wounded. Yeah,
yeah, got wounded. I keep saying Doran, don't I? I mean Oberyn. If I said Doran, I apologize. I meant Oberyn. He recovers rather quickly, and this Lord Ironwood continues to get worse off and eventually dies. And that a lot of people think that Oberyn had poisoned him. And I thought, wow, that says something about a man. I mean, why poison and kill this man? You were the one that were caught with his paramour, you know?
That's right. That was the point of the duel, right? He had slept with Ironwood's paramour, yeah.
Yes. So, and you kill him. I mean, that says something about a person.
So question about that. I mean, of course, we don't know if it's true. I mean,
right? We don't. You know, we don't.
This is. I don't really trust the Maester's medical abilities, and anyone could catch an infection and die. You know, Miri Mazdour showed that you don't have to.
Right.
The great
good example, right?
But what's interesting about that is the fact that he then later in life goes to Essos and learns poisoncraft as if he was like, that really worked. I've got to know more. You know?
That worked fantastically.
Right. Or the flip side is, well, everyone already thinks I'm a poisoner. I might as well go and learn some
right. Now I got to brush up on my poisoning skills.
Yeah, but it is, yeah, it's an interesting bit of backstory.
But and if we go through some of his lists of achievements, which are quite remarkable, I think we get a really fascinating picture of a man. So, like you said, studied poisoner's trade, forged 6 links of a maester's chain, rode with sellsword band in Essos, the second sons, and then started his own sellsword company. I mean, the first thing, a couple things that makes me think of is that it shows that this is a man who's as intelligent as he is skilled as a fighter. And another, the other thing is, it also makes me think he's possibly searching for something, because he does all these various random endeavors, and he does them very well, but then he clearly goes off and does something else. Forges 6 links of a maester's chain, then gets bored and leaves the citadel.
You know? He got bored of the...
Right.
I need a 7th link.
And, you know, I think that might be the plight of the youngest son of the Princess of Dorne, because, as we've talked about, there's no clear path for one who is not being raised to be the heir to the Dornish throne.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, he forges 6 links of the maester's chain. I went to look up how many you need. Like, what is the minimum you need to become a maester? The information is not yet been made known.
Oh.
But we will meet a character sometime in a kind of little bit in the future who is an older acolyte. And he's forged 9 links, but is still not yet a maester.
Not a maester.
It seems to be at least 9.
So you think there is a set number? It doesn't just depend on the size of your net,
right?
Right. Okay.
Skinny guys can get it done in 4. and a couple other things: the disputed lands, which is where he went off and fought. That's the land between the free cities of Lys, Myr, and Tyrosh, which is on the southwest coast of Essos. And, of course, the second sons are a sellsword company from the Free Cities in Essos. So I just wanted to point all that stuff out.
So it's also a fun story about baby Tyrion.
Depending on your perspective, whether it's fun or not.
Probably not for Tyrion. No. But so he wasn't the monster that the Martell kids had hoped to see. So, I mean, Oberyn was just a teenager at the time. He wasn't a grown-up. So
right.
Keep that in mind. Tyrion wasn't only not a monster, but he was actually cute enough to make Elia make the noise that teenage girls make when they see a baby or a puppy, you know?
Right.
But the Cersei cameo in that story is very telling. You know, we've speculated before that Cersei has never forgiven Tyrion for killing her mother. And she literally says it at this point, that he is a monster. He killed my mother.
Yeah. I think Tyrion questions the same thing that I questioned, is why bring those details up? Why bring up such pain, clearly what are going to be painful, kind of unnecessary details to say, hey, I met you when you were a newborn, and bring up those just like, I mean, I think the line is something like, even though it was a warm day, Tyrion went cold inside hearing that. And the fact that Cersei said, what does it matter? He's not supposed to live long anyway. Everyone says he's going to die soon.
Yeah.
And also hearing the rumors about him as an infant being his father's downfall, his father's punishment, his father's curse, certainly has to be a hard thing to hear.
Yes. We didn't mention that in the summary, but that is sort of one of the things that Oberyn says about Tyrion, and Tyrion sort of jokes it off, but I mean, it's honestly, though, given how Tywin has treated Tyrion, I think if I were Tyrion, I would hope that it were true.
A little bit of retribution for right. The way you've treated me.
Pre-retribution, yes. Yeah, I made you miserable, and I'm glad I did. But the whole thing did make me think about how Cersei's life must have been in Casterly Rock, because, I mean, her family's now all male with the death of her mother. And so she probably was a little bit lonely for female company. Obviously, she had Jaime for company, but that wasn't,
you know,
the healthiest
I had
thing.
Never thought about that. Yeah, you know, I guess maybe Tywin was just too you know, too much in mourning to think about this, but he could have sent Cersei to Foster with his sister, Jenna.
I think, he does kind of, the way we've heard the story is that he was pretty withdrawn from that point onwards, you know, he didn't.
Right.
But it's, yeah, I mean, her life must have been tricky, Cersei, but yeah, to Oberyn's motivation here, I mean, I've got to think he knows this is going to sting and he's happy to create dissension in the Lannister ranks, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But the other little cameo in there is Jaime protecting Tyrion. Probably the first time that that's happened.
Yeah, and, yeah.
That's a thread that runs through the story.
Yeah, it definitely gives us a glimpse into why Tyrion has such love for Jaime.
Yeah. And Oberyn says in passing, he said that she would have done it, but for, I mean, what it was, I mean, just twisting his penis, but she would have kept doing it, but for Jaime's intervention. So there's also that kind of, she does do what Jaime says, even if it goes against what she wants to do.
Right.
Like, he's one of the few people who can distract her from her course.
Has some control over her, what she's doing, yeah. But then there's a very quick piece where Oberyn Martell mentions that Tyrion has instituted a prostitution tax in King's Landing.
Yep.
And, you know, once again, Tyrion takes the blame as Master of Coin for this, even though it wasn't his idea. It was his father's idea. Mm-hmm. On the surface, his father suggested that it was to improve the morals in the city. Mm-hmm. But then Tyrion thinks to himself, and to pay for Joffrey's wedding. Right. So once again, we see Tyrion as the royal scapegoat here. They're referring to it as the dwarf's penny.
Poor Tyrion. And,
I know, right? But it made me think that possibly we see Tywin's dislike for prostitution going beyond Tyrion's involvement.
Yeah.
Or he's just looking at it as a good way to pay for a wedding.
Yeah.
And another thing we learn in this chapter real quick is that Tyrion is still holding to his deal with Sansa, despite the deal of, you know, not bedding her.
He says, I'm wedded, but he thinks, but not bedded.
Right. And last time we met Tyrion, he was pretty much being told by his father, bed your wife. This is a command.
That's right.
He's apparently still not done it, so he's holding strong to that deal.
Yeah. So just a reminder about the Elia murder. So Elia Martell was Rhaegar's wife, widow by this point when the sack of King's Landing happened. She and her two children, Rhaenys and Aegon, who was just a baby, were in King's Landing when the sack happened, and the three of them were murdered. It's believed they were at the hands of Gregor Clegane, the Mountain, and Armory Lorch, who we know from pillaging the Riverlands.
Right.
So, given that Clegane is a Lannister man, the Martell's gripe towards the Lannisters starts there. Can we see a resolution to this impasse? I mean, it's tough to see an easy out. Gregor Clegane is Tywin's, stealing a word from his brother, dog.
Right.
But Tywin is pretty hard-nosed, and if sacrificing the Mountain is the price for peace with Dorne, he'd do it in a heartbeat if he wants peace with Dorne.
Right, yes.
The problem, really, for Tywin, though, is that what Oberyn wants is not just Clegane's head. He wants to know who ordered it.
Right.
And I don't know who ordered it. You know I don't know. You know I'm not faking here. But Tywin Lannister was in town and Gregor Clegane was Tywin's man. So there's a real chance that it is Tywin Lannister who's to blame for this. And
yeah, Tywin will have to, maybe he'll cut Gregor's tongue out before before turning him over if he does that.
You know what? If that happens, I would say to him, I would say, all right, Gregor, I know you can't say anything, okay? But this person here is Tyrion Lannister. This person here is Jamie Lannister. This person here is Tywin Lannister. Did one of these do it? And let him point.
Point to the person who ordered you to do it. Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, I think one of the things I'm just mentioning about the murders, they were real murders. They weren't just part of the sack of King's Landing. I mean, they were executed. You know, it wasn't
right.
Just
yes.
Because this was inside the Red Keep where the sack of King's Landing didn't really happen. This was just a political assassination.
Right. And we just learned last chapter that Elia and the kids were left behind because weren't sent to Dragonstone because Aerys wanted to control the Martells and Dorne. Right.
Yeah.
And so
if he can't hand over his man, which is possible, he might have him killed for his silence, to keep him silent. That's possible too. But does that satisfy the Martells? Probably not. He can string Oberyn along for a while, but Tyrion tried to string him along for like 2 sentences.
He did.
And Oberyn immediately saw it for what it was and turned, you know, basically revealed the other side of his character, which, you know, was very dark and very scary.
Right. Yes, that you're right. He tried to string him along for 10 seconds, maybe, if that.
So if you say, oh, yeah, next week I'm going to call Gregor Clegane, see if he'll come in.
Right.
That's not gonna get anywhere.
Yes.
So do you see a way out? I can't think of anything.
It's quite the predicament. I mean, the way out is to sacrifice Gregor without giving up who ordered Gregor. If you could figure out how to do that, you'd be in good shape.
So maybe it's sacrifice Gregor and then push Marcella to marry. Does Doran have children?
Yeah, he's got 3. Yeah, she's betrothed to Trystane.
Oh, she's already betrothed. That's right. That was the plan for her to marry. Yeah. So bring that forward to sort of like put a gloss over this, you know, to sort of like reestablish the connection. It was Gregor Clegane. He was a monster. He had no control. We've put him to death. And let's have a royal wedding.
You know what they could do is, you know, where Gregor is right now, he's off fighting in the Riverlands. What if he didn't survive and they brought his body back and said, Oberyn, I'm so sorry. He died in the fighting, but here's his body. Do with it what you will.
His last words were, it was Ned Stark.
That will work even better.
Fantastic. We've got it. We should call Tywin, let him know.
There's a line that Oberyn says that in Dorne, before we married Darren, it was said that all flowers wilt before the sun. And I just wanted to mention what that was in reference to in case it caught anybody off guard. Actually, it was just last week we mentioned King Darren II.
Yeah.
And, you know, previous episodes, backgrounds and such, we had talked about how King Darren II took a Dornish wife and brokered a deal to peacefully bring Dorne into the realm. So that is the before we married Darren part.
I think I called Darren II Darren I earlier. If I did, I'm sorry.
I think, well, there's 2 Darrens.
But I think.
And they obviously, but what they both dealt with obviously you got it right. The first
it was the
Darren,
same guy. The first and the second, he took 2 turns.
The first is the one that said that categorized the 3.
Oh, Dornish. I assumed it was the second because I know he had a lot of so they both had a lot of connections with Dorne then.
Yes,
interesting.
I believe Darren the first is the one who forcefully brought Dorne into the realm. That didn't hold. Darren II did it in a peaceful manner.
The combination of Dorne, Darren, and Doran is...
Oh, I know.
It's tripping you up a lot. It's quite
and
funny to
a,
watch.
Did I just mess it up right
no,
now?
No, you nailed it. But you were on the tightrope, I could see.
Uh-huh. Well, and the other thing I wanted to mention is that Oberyn talks about how Mace Tyrell kind of pushed his children into the lists of tournaments too early, and that is how Willis Tyrell ended up getting injured in his joust against Oberyn. And they're kind of going back and forth, Oberyn and Tyrion, and Tyrion saying, hey, Oberyn is, I mean, Loras is quite the, you know, quite the knight these days. And Oberyn is like, yeah, I don't buy it. Who has he really killed? And Tyrion mentions that Loras killed Sir Robar Royce and Sir Emon Kai. And those were two of Renly's Rainbow Guard that he killed in his fit of madness over Renly's death. It was Royce was the one who let Kat and Brienne escape, who bought Kat's story about the Shadow Assassin. And Emon is the one that fought Brienne thinking she had killed Renly. So he mentions those as like serious knights that he's killed in battle, but really he just, out of anger, them, just basically. Murdered them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's interesting. I loved Oberyn's line about, you know, his feats in the Blackwater were renowned according to Tyrion, but Oberyn's like, and he said as he fought alongside Renly's ghost, he's like, so the people who said he had these real feats also said he was fighting alongside a ghost. He's like,
okay.
I see. I'm following. The chapter is full of good gags, actually.
I love it
when he's talking about being in Casterly Rock when Tyrion was a baby. They never saw Tyrion until the very last night, but they heard him every night screaming and wailing, you know, the whole time. And it was said that nothing would quiet him but a woman's teat. And Tyrion says, still true as it happens. Cracked me up.
It cracked Oberyn up too.
That was the one that made Oberyn laugh. Yes. Yeah.
So at the end of the chapter, Tyrion says to Oberyn, he gives him advice to tie his brothel, and he says, Danzy and another girl both have blonde hair. You're going to want to keep them around you at all times. And Oberyn says, why is that? And he said, because you said you wanted to die with a breast in your hand. So
right.
I took that to mean
you might die while you're in King's Landing.
Yes, that, yes. You know, he is
not that coded.
you're right. I think the reason he said it was he was frustrated that he's not going to be able to control Oberyn Martell. Oberyn Martell is going to be Oberyn Martell. He's going to end up getting in a fight with Lannisters or Tyrells and end up getting himself killed.
Definitely possible. We shall look forward to it. Okay, so you have a whole new kingdom to give us background on. What are you going to choose?
We'll see. Did I choose Dorne?
No, of course you didn't.
Of course I didn't. So Oberyn says that Mace Tyrell wanted to have another Leo Longthorn regarding putting his sons in the lists at such an early age. And Tyrion says it's thought by some that Loras Tyrell is already better than Leo Longthorn ever was. So who was this mysterious Leo? Well, turns out he was actually a relative of Mace and Loras. Leo Longthorn was also known as Lord Leo Tyrell. Conveniently enough, he was Lord of Highgarden during the reign of King Daeron II, who had just come up a few moments ago and also came up last chapter. Leo fought on behalf of King Daeron II in the First Blackfyre Rebellion, which was why Daeron came up last chapter when I talked about the Blackfyre Rebellion. Mm-hmm. He was a well-respected and liked man, and in fact, late in his life, Sir Duncan the Tall and Aegg, the future Aegon V, actually drank a toast to Leo during a wedding tourney as they heard he was unwell.
I have a vague recollection of that, yeah. Comparison with the television show, it's adapted. Tyrion, Bronn, and Pod do ride out to meet the Martells, but neither Doran nor Oberyn show up. It's just sort of the Martell dignitaries. The expected head is missing. Oberyn and his paramour Ilaria have snuck into King's Landing in advance and are already in the brothel. And that is where Tyrion and Bronn find them later on, up to all manner of things with the clientele.
Surprisingly, I remember this.
Yes.
Pretty vividly.
I'm beginning to see a pattern here. But Oberyn most certainly does tell Tyrion that he is here for justice for Elias. So that is not lost.
No unclear terms.
Yeah. Pedantry. This chapter was just perfect. No pedantry at all.
Perfect chapter. Well done, George R.R. Martin.
Yeah, yeah. News and notes.
Well, we don't have much in the way of news and notes today, but I did come across a really nice comment in our 50th episode video on YouTube. So I just wanted to read it out here. It's from Amin Salim. And Amin says, I started listening to the podcast a few weeks back. I'm trying to catch up to where you guys are now. I listened to most of the episode on Spotify, but decided to finish on YouTube. It's really nice to put faces to your voices. Thank you guys so much for keeping me company during my walks. An Egyptian based in France.
Well, thank you, Amin. That's really nice of you.
Yes, thank you very much. And he must be moving. A few weeks back, he's already through episode 50. He's really ripping through our catalog.
And honestly, it's really nice to put faces to your voices. I mean, that's about as nice as you can say about that. I mean, like,
yeah.
You could have chosen disappointing.
I really wish I hadn't put faces to your voices.
Why didn't the algorithm stop this?
It ruined everything.
No, that's awesome. Thank you, Amin. That's a very nice thing to say. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yes, thank you.
All right, let's conclude. So we have an awesome new character. Tyrion is oddly prickly around him. And obviously, because almost everything that Oberyn said was kind of fond or flattering or forgiving or true.
Yeah, well, true. Yes, he mocked him a good bit.
He did mock him a good bit. But some of that was definitely not aimed at Tyrion, but aimed at Joffrey.
Yeah, well, yes. Except for that he did call him smaller than you are now in a mocking tone that Tyrion didn't care for.
Yeah. So. Well, Tyrion's just got to get over that. Oberyn's going to be mocking wherever he goes.
I guess so. He did remind Tyrion that he was called Tywin's Doom and was the curse and punishment of his father. And that he killed his mother. In case he had forgotten, he killed his mother.
Well, okay. You're laying out a decent case.
But I agree completely, though, that it is great. He's going to be a great new character. And like I said earlier, I really like the fact that we now have Dorne in the picture finally.
Yes. So yes. Needed. That I want. We're going to go all Columbo, get to the bottom of this Elia murder.
That's right. And you mentioned Marcella earlier, and it made me think about the fact that we did not get an update on her well-being. You would think that might have come up.
Or indeed whereabouts.
Right, yeah.
She could still be at sea.
She's in the disputed lands fighting now.
Forming her own sellsword company.
You know, you'd think that that would have been one of the first things that came up. How is Marcella?
Exactly.
Oh, here, let me tell you how
Good
Marcella
point.
Is.
Yeah.
Of course, it could mean nothing. Or it could mean that she is a hostage until Elia's death has been set right.
Or it could be that it went out of Tyrion's mind because Doran didn't show up. You know what I mean?
Oh,
I mean,
yes.
If it had been Doran, he might have been all prepared to say, oh, how's my niece? You know, that kind of thing. But he was thrown through a loop by Oberyn.
True. He did think about Marcella, though, and think, oh, this might have been a bad idea.
Yes.
For me to have sent her there.
So Oberyn provides more fuel for Tyrion to dislike Cersei, which he didn't need. He was abused even as a helpless baby. And again, I'm convinced that Oberyn's doing that because he'd love nothing more than to make the Lannisters dislike each other, little knowing that they already don't.
Yes, and it certainly comes across that he shares the same sentiment about the Lannisters. Yeah. So,
and yeah, can Oberyn get justice? It's possible, but I can't see it. It's going to be a pretty nihilistic Pyrrhic victory if he gets it, because lots of things have to crumble for him to be satisfied. And one of the things might be the whole peace of the realm might fall on this.
Oh yeah, for sure. And
which
it seems like it's
to begin with.
Right. The last thing they needed was to add more problems, but here comes Oberyn. It seems he is primarily here for the justice of Elia and the kids. Possibly little interest in governing the realm. He didn't lead off by saying, I have some fantastic ideas on how we can lower taxes and raise, healthcare benefits for the members of the King's Landing. Mm-hmm. You know, that those kind of ideas weren't the first things out of his mouth.
No. So where's the brothel?
Right, where's the brothel and where's Gregor Clegane?
You're an imp. Where's the brothel? And I want the head of Gregor Clegane still talking.
Right.
Who do we see next week?
So next week we are off to visit Arya.
Arya, is she going to finally meet Beric Dondarrion? Oh wait, that's actually happened now, hasn't it?
That has happened finally, yes. Well, what we will get is Gendry making a big decision. And we'll see how the whole, you know, Hound and Brotherhood Without Banners thing plays out now that he is still alive, and so is Beric Dondarrion.
So is Beric Dondarrion, yes. There's three ways that you can help us. You could leave us a review. You could buy merchandise at ghostsofharrenhal.threadless.com. You could buy a cup of Arbor Gold at buymeacoffee.com/ghostharrenhal and become a sustainer at the Lord Paramount or Knight of the Realm level and enjoy the benefits that are attached thereto.
That's right. And as always, of course, you can reach us at ghost.harrenhal@gmail.com. You can go out and follow us on Twitter @ghostharrenhal. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Discord, and YouTube.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.